So every time you stumble, never grumble.
Next time you bumble, even less. For up from the ashes, up from the ashes, grow the roses of success.
This is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
Grow the roses of success. Oh, yes.
Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I am your bespectacled, behatted, bearded broadcaster, Ethan Hatcher, in the studio for another wacky week of news. We got aliens, indictments, and plea deals. Oh my, so much to get into. There was no shortage of topics for which to cover for this week's edition of the show. Very exciting stuff. Check my podcasts uploaded to Saturday Night on the Circle.fireside.fm, WIBC.com, where there's also a new feature. Producer Graham, you see this whiteboard drawing behind me here, and also the one leaning against the wall. Every so often, I'm inspired by political events and news to do artistic commentary, or to commemorate important events here around the station. You can find a collection of all of those drawings now uploaded and cataloged on WIBC.com. on the show page, so you should check it out. Also welcoming to the show, producer Graham. I think this is the first time you've produced my show, right?
It is.
Okay, well, welcome to the program.
Thank
I hope
you.
You're
Thanks
thoroughly
for having
entertained.
Me.
You have big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
Producer Carl does quite a lot to help this show run very smoothly, so you have a high standard
I
to
hope
maintain.
I can live up.
We expect nothing less, good sir. And also, howdy to everybody in the YouTube chat. Let's get into it. Of course, one of the big news items, Hunter Biden's plea deal just completely collapsed on the court Wednesday morning. This federal judge, she started asking questions. I guess she came from the patent office and was tearing it apart. The Biden team trying to sneak total immunity of some kind into the plea deal and then taking it off the table once that wasn't achieved, because they're like, oh no, Biden needed to be immune from future prosecution as well, which is completely unprecedented, something the judge was pointing out. And CNN breathlessly covered this on Wednesday as the deal fell apart.
As I went back into the courtroom, the hearing had just begun again. The judge was back on the bench, and she was pressing the prosecution on this investigation and the four corners of this plea agreement. One of the prosecutors said that the investigation was very much ongoing, and that she asked him, well, what is not covered in this plea agreement if you are leaving the possibility for there being other future charges? So then the judge said, would this include a possible FARA charge that's not registering as a foreign agent? The prosecutor said, no, the deal would not include that. It was at that point that she had said to the prosecution, if you can charge that, then what does this mean? And the prosecutors, actually, she asked Hunter Biden's attorneys about that, and he said, well, then there's no deal. And the prosecutor said, then there is no deal. So Biden's team said that the plea agreement, as far as they understood it, was now null and void. They were moving ahead to talk about what the next steps would be in this case. So as of right now, the deal appears to be dead and off the table, and it remains to be seen how they're going to move forward. But he has been charged with those two misdemeanor tax evasion charges, but one thing we learned is that this investigation is very much still ongoing.
Woo! Celebration time! I can't believe it. Score one for the little guy. Now, mind you, there is still an incredible high probability that the Department of Justice is going to collude with the Biden legal team and ultimately shield him from any severe ramifications for his actions. Nevertheless, this is pretty stunning that the deal is now off the table, essentially taking it all back to square one. Hunter Biden did not expect this marching into the courtroom on Wednesday morning, I dare say. They threw him for a court curveball. And now all the legal heads, you know, are commenting and weighing in. And they're saying, well, there was a miscommunication between the Justice Department and Biden's legal team. Uh-huh. You know, they're pulling all sorts of shenanigans or chicanery, as Michael Keane would say from Better Call Saul, his character. Impersonating Republicans, calling into the clerk's office, and then the judge here putting a gag on contacting the clerk's office and saying all requests had to come through the justice's office. So this is some pretty interesting stuff, and it's been
an ongoing week for Hunter Biden. Last week, of course, his lawyer filing that ethics complaint against Marjorie Taylor Greene for the hearing at the House Oversight and Accountability Committee, in which she displayed sexual pictures of him in compromising positions, although the faces of third parties were blurred, his were not. And the lawyer has filed an ethics complaint in that regard, which I think is interesting because it is an outright admission that everything contained within the laptop is absolutely legitimate, as if we didn't already know that. For so long, they were trying to maintain that, oh, this is Russian disinformation. Everything on that laptop is a hoax. It's not legitimate. And now we've marched all the way up to Marjorie Taylor Greene bringing in poster board sized selfies of Hunter Biden and his escapades with prostitutes. And this did connect with the IRS investigation because he was deducting, allegedly, expenses on his taxes for his escapades with prostitutes. So this is all very damning stuff. Of course, corruption everywhere surrounding the Biden crime family. Will there be any accountability? It's doubtful. We've come to expect so little from our lawmakers, but for it to be so blatant and just out there on a repeated basis certainly has an incredibly withering effect to the integrity of our republic, not the least of which including the basically pay-to-play scheme that is continuously ongoing within the Biden crime family and Karine Jean-Pierre. Oh! Getting questioned about that because of a prominent Democrat donor who got a cushy appointment last year shortly after making buys for Hunter Biden's artwork at a show in Hollywood, herself being a Los Angeles resident. Here's Karine Jean-Pierre, of course, doing her due diligence and denying any knowledge of more than a dozen trips to the White House from this prominent donor.
Elizabeth Naftali, she's made more than a dozen visits here to the White House and met with some of the president's most senior advisors. Can you tell us a little bit more about those visits, why she was here?
I would have to look into that. I've not been tracking these visits that you're mentioning to me.
Liar! Liar! Liar!
Get back, witch!
You have visitor logs. You are you are on the inner circle of the White House day to day. You're on the cabinet. You're the press secretary. You're telling me you haven't seen this woman in one of over a dozen times coming to the White House, a prominent Democrat donor, palling around and getting appointed to what is this? She was appointed to his Commission for the Preservation of America's Heritage Abroad in July 2022, 8 months after Hunter's first art show in Hollywood, in which he procured one of his infamous artworks, which are not anything near as good as the stuff I do on the whiteboard here at WIBC, all of which you can check out uploaded to the show page Saturday Night on the Circle on WIBC.com. I implore you to check it out. And if you want to give me hundreds of thousands of dollars, hell, I'll take tens of thousands of dollars and give you a steep discount compared to Hunter Biden. You can have any one of them. Promise. Isn't that a good deal, Producer Graham? I think that's a good offer for the listeners.
It's a heck of a deal.
Yeah, right? Thanks for listening to the show Saturday Night on The Circle. Stay tuned because coming up next, Rob Kendall is coming on and we're going to discuss his interview with Jefferson Shreve on Kendall and Casey's show, in which he made some rather interesting admissions supporting his aims to enact gun control. If he is elected mayor of Indianapolis. So we're going to talk about that and kind of play some key moments that I thought were important for consideration. And then later next hour, Jason Hammer is coming on the show because Shreve's proposals are a little bit of a problem, and I thought it merited a consideration for our audience, considering we are in Indianapolis. Makes sense. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on The Circle. Stay tuned for that and so much more on 93 WIBC.
You're listening to Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIBC.
Hello and welcome back to Saturday Night on the Circle. I'm the Bohemian Codger, Ethan Hatcher. Don't miss my podcasts uploaded to saturdaynightonthecircle.fireside.fm, wibc.com, and hop in the comments while we stream live on the YouTube. The big day finally arrived when Jefferson Shreve came to the WIBC studios to explain his thoughts on his public safety plan and how he arrived at the proposals regarding gun control in Indianapolis. Here to reflect on those candid moments on the airwaves is one half of the Kendall and Casey Show, the rambunctious rapscallion of radio, the rant and ramblin' rogue off the rails, Rob Kendall, joins the show once again. Welcome, sir.
Ethan, you look more skinny and more beautiful every time I see you.
It works because I'm working hard in the summer, and it has been so hot, I've sweated a lot of the weight away.
Yes, you should write a book or do a documentary or something.
So you had a... Let's be diplomatic here and call it an interesting interview with the Republican mayoral candidate Jefferson Shreve on Wednesday. And he came back with some interesting feedback to your questions. I felt he was often deflective of the issue, especially regarding his proposals most central to gun control. It was an interesting exchange, sir. But I mean, kudos to him for coming in.
Yeah.
Like we will give him the credit for coming in and defending his viewpoint. It was something.
Well, I think it's a guy who made a choice. I think he listened to some people who didn't give him good advice. I think he underestimated what the backlash would be as it related to those proposals on gun grabs. And he stuck, right?
Yeah.
He stuck.
Well, now that he's doubled and tripled down.
Well, and so that's the big thing is I don't think they believed he would lose voters en masse like he has. And the people are not coming back. They're angry because it's a lack of trust now.
Yeah.
And I think he thought, because I've been pretty measured in my response, and we can get to that here in a minute if you want. I think he thought, hey, they got a big audience. He's been pretty measured. Let's go on there. I'll try to do a little song and dance and explain it away. And I think it made the situation worse.
Well, he tried to put the blame, so to speak, on the police and like, oh, well, it was after a long conversation with the police chief and other members within the force. And that's how I came up with this plan.
There are three major components that seem to have people upset about them. It is raising the age to buy a firearm to 21 years old. It is ending permitless carry in Marion County. And it is banning of assault weapons. I am curious why you honed in on those three things and said these are the three things we have to do to make Indianapolis safer.
They're driven by conversations with our police leadership. So I've campaigned in the primary and I'll continue to campaign on being supportive of our police community.
Supportive of the police community. Do you really believe that they're the people responsible for this?
Well, it's like the thing, it goes back to the argument we always hear the time with public education. Unless you're for unlimited money to public education without any accountability whatsoever, well, then you hate kids. It's the same thing here. If you are for law-abiding citizens being able to exercise their constitutional right to carry a firearm, then that doesn't mean you don't support the police. That means you believe in law-abiding people exercising their constitutional right to carry a firearm. It's a ridiculous argument.
Well, I also think he's missed the point because it's the mayor's job to represent the voters, not represent the police. And although I love the members of the police force, if making the laws were up to them, damn near everything would be illegal, much like the private prison system, which often lobbies to have stricter sentences for petty crimes. I love our police. I love our police members and support them. We should, but represent the voters. We must. That's the most pertinent aspect.
Yeah. And look, I mean, you know, he invoked Doug Carter in this, which that's the wrong show and the wrong station to invoke Doug Carter. I think he's grasping at straws because when you force somebody to explain the proposals that he has, whether it is the assault weapons ban, the raising the firearm age, or the ending permitless carry, it all falls apart when you have to explain it out loud. It's just a terrible idea, and you can't duck and dodge on a terrible idea if people actually ask you the questions, which we did.
It's a terrible idea because he doesn't have the authority to accomplish his aim, something he admitted in the context of the interview, like, oh, it's up to the General Assembly.
It is not pandering to say, okay, these are some elements, having listened to our policing community, that makes sense, that they feel strongly about, that I will support as a city's chief executive, and I will go through the due course of law and asking for these things.
Okay.
So the way you do that is you include it in your legislative priorities at the start of the session, and you take them before the members of our General Assembly. Look, it's up to them.
Leah, I think I can smell shite. Yes, I can definitely smell shite.
Yeah, What
do you mean it's up to the General Assembly?
Well, look, he's right in the sense of it's up to the General Assembly if they want to grant some sort of special permission.
Sure.
It's so he's not so lying
about
that.
Wrong.
But it's look,
it's the mayor. You're supposed to go to the town council. The problems are solved at the city county building, not at the state house. My God, you have missed basic civics, my friend.
Yeah. Here's the thing, Ethan. We asked him to explain. You know, look, if a kid is, you have to be 18 right now to purchase a firearm. If a kid at 15, because he invokes, 15-year-olds having firearms. If they have a firearm at 15, they've already obtained the gun illegally to begin with. Yeah. What difference does it make if you raise the age?
How does it make, No, you encapsulated it perfectly, but it gets even worse because he doesn't have any members within the General Assembly who've even said that they would support this.
Now, who on the state legislature has made you believe that they're going to support your plan?
No one from the state legislature has told me that they're going to do this.
What are we going to do with this?
Well, look, Ethan, here is the way I looked at it, is when he proposed this at first, because people said, well, you're being pretty measured, about this. And I thought, okay, the guy is 80% better than Hogsett. If this is a wink and a nod and I'm going to just forget about it, I don't like that, but we got to get rid of Hogsett because the city can't sustain 4 more years of Hogsett. So I thought, well, if he's just checking a box to try to take the ads away from Hogsett, then maybe there's some weird world where I can get past it. And I thought the interview, when he came in, initially when we started setting up this interview, that was what this was going to kind of be about. He wasn't going to say that, obviously, but he was going to make that kind of, clear. But when you start seeing it as a focal point of television ads, and you start seeing it as a focal point of an Indy Star op-ed, and then he said very clearly in the interview, this is not pandering, I absolutely intended to try to do this. Why? I can't save you then. Yeah. I can't go to bat for this. I can't go to bat for you.
So if you were a Marion County voter, he at that point would have lost your vote.
Well, you know my rule, Ethan. Votes are earned. They're not given. I leave most of my ballot blank. And as bad as Joe Hogsett is, you can't reward this sort of behavior.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with it. I feel so distraught because I desperately do not want another 4 years of Joe Hogsett, but I feel incredibly uncomfortable putting my vote behind Jefferson Shreve, especially because you cannot say that this was some sort of accident. He had to know on some level, if even only subconscious, this was going to bomb because he could have put this front and center on his laptop-sized thick cardboard stock mailers that he stuffed my mailbox with. Abdul was front and center with his public safety proposals, but then Shreve's coming around like, oh, well, it took 2 months for me to figure this out, and I'm here to learn. Are you, though, or was this, a sleight of hand?
No,
now that you've secured the position?
You're right in the sense of, I don't know exactly what the guy's worth, but it may be very well near $1 billion. There are no stupid billionaires who have legally obtained $1 billion. The guy's very bright, but just because you're a very business savvy person doesn't mean you're politically savvy. And he totally misread the room on this. And I think they're very surprised at the backlash.
I love when Casey stumped him about the teenagers and punishment for crimes that they would already be illegally committing at the age of 15, raising it to 21. This was beautiful.
You have young people that aren't nearly responsible enough for the great responsibility that goes along with possessing a handgun. Just like the great responsibility.
If they're not afraid of a shootout or going to prison, why would they be afraid of a fine that they may not be accountable to pay?
No answer.
Well, there isn't one. And that's the point. And so it was funny, Ethan, because when we did the interview, people were like, I can't believe you weren't going off the rails on him. I can't believe you weren't yelling at him. Look, we had 25-ish minutes of content, 45 with commercials. We had about 93 things we needed to get to. And my belief on this, and this is how I've always handled interviews, Ethan, is if I ask the right questions, you're going to come to your own conclusion. I don't need to beat a guy up. If I ask the right questions, the right follow-up questions, which you clearly have, as is most of our audience, people have formed their own conclusion, which is the right conclusion, based on the questions that were asked.
That's what you texted me. I'm glad you brought this up, because I texted you after that interview. I never expected you to be rude, because obviously you are a consummate professional here, but you have pushed back harder on me in conversations we've had over these airwaves. I kind of thought more of the Kendall fire would be there, but we got the important sound bites.
Yes.
So we got to the thing. So you did it, man.
Ethan, I've never been that way as an interviewer. I'm that way as a commentator. But as an interviewer, you are the person. I've never interviewed you. That's part of why I push back. We're sparring on the air for fun. But as an interviewer, my job is to get as much information out of you as I can, because I believe the audience is smart enough to draw the conclusion as they have here. All these people have been upset. They've all come to the same conclusion, which means we did our job. As an interviewer, you're the guest. You're the person I'm interested in learning about. My job is to extract as much information out of you as humanly possible.
The most interesting part to me was that it seemed he finally got to what should be the core of the issue about 20 minutes or so into a 25-minute interview when he finally just said the thing we've all been waiting for.
Hogsett may run an ad about hiring 700 cops, but look at where we are on net. We're losing our talented, experienced veterans that can up that solve rate so we can pull those young, violent offenders off the street. And the system has to work. The court system and the prosecutorial system needs to work. Public safety is an ecosystem. The mayor doesn't control all of it, but the mayor's got the bully pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
I will be, whether it's from the city-county building or if elected from this studio, I will be on message about, ladies and gentlemen, our prosecutor has a responsibility to us to move these people along so we get them off the street.
He said it. He said it. There it is. There it is.
That's all we wanted. You should have led with that, my man.
Look, it's... So here is where he's at, Ethan. He has done immense damage to his campaign. The interview, I thought he would come in more prepared or have a better answers. That's why I was kind of excited to talk to him. Didn't help. I'm convinced there's one thing that can save him right now, and that is if he does a large-scale ad buy on television stations across this city, where he calls out where Joe Hogsett was during the riots.
Yeah.
I think if he does an aggressive ad blitz, that will motivate enough people who hate Joe Hogsett and will be fired up about that to maybe forgive him for this. I think that is about it. I think people are so done with him over this that he's going to have to really pull a rabbit out of his hat in order to get these people back. And I've thought about it long and hard, and I think that is all he can do. Everybody knows where Joe Hogsett was during the riots. Everybody knows why he disappeared. Call him out on it. That might get people fired up.
I agree, because at this point, it's a Hail Mary pitch to just reset the conversation.
And it gets you off the gun conversation. Once he runs that ad about where Joe Hogsett was during the riots, then every media story, everything becomes about, Shreve calls out Hogsett over the riots. The headlines write themselves. And then you get off the gun conversation, because right now he's stuck. He can't get off the gun conversation.
Rob, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, Ethan. You're the best, man.
It's been a great chat. Stay tuned to Saturday Night on The Circle, 93 WIBC.
Is Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIPC.
Welcome back to the weekly catalog of societal decline, where we bring you the finest selections in stupidity. This week, featuring juicy cuts of cringe Jean-Pierre feigning ignorance on a prominent Democrat donor obtaining a cushy administration appointment after helping fund Hunter's artistic endeavors. Nor can she provide any explanation for the updated language regarding business dealings with his father. Meanwhile, Canada Burns and Justin Trudeau adds new letters to the ever-growing, all-consuming monolith that is the alphabet soup community. And the mental health minister anguishes over the clown world we're living in, but not for the reasons you'd wish. Hear it all in this week's edition of Hat Tricks with Hatcher.
It's time for another one of Hatcher's Hat Tricks.
The story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
You're listening to Saturday Night on The Circle, where I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher, and producer Graham is beep, 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 pushing the buttons and doing the things necessary to make the show function. Doing a good job stepping in this evening. We appreciate the hard work, producer Graham. Beginning this week with a cringe. I like that. I like that nickname, cringe Jean-Pierre. Deflecting questions about the evolving language surrounding
surrounding Hunter Biden's business dealings with his father, because up to this point, of course, the White House and Daddy Joe have maintained he has had no communication with his son about his business transactions. Recently, that's been updated to say he and his son have not been in business together, which does seem like a noted change. However, Corinne, saying that nothing has changed in that regard.
Elizabeth Naftali, she's made more than a dozen visits here. The president has previously said that he has never discussed overseas business dealings with his son, but the White House now says that the president has never been in business with his son. So why the updated language? Which statement is true? Or is this semantics and they're both true?
As I stated on Monday, when I was asked this question multiple times, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed on this. Nothing has changed on this. And so you could ask me a million different ways on this question. Nothing has changed.
All right, move on. Nothing to see here. Please disperse. Nothing to see here. Please.
As more information from the laptop from hell comes to light, we understand more of Hunter Biden's shady business transactions. It seems all too evident that he was absolutely peddling the family name for his own personal enrichment payments, not only to him, but other family members from international businessmen abroad that seem very connected with the goings on of the at the White House while Daddy Joe was vice president at the time. So, you know, there is more information coming to light. It seems more evident than ever that, yes, there was a connection, and the updated language surrounding how they frame that discussion is very telling, ultimately. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on The Circle. You may remember, I think it's been more than 6 months, hasn't it, since the train derailment of East Palestine, Ohio. And at the time, the White House, President Joe, had said he would visit the beleaguered town. Since then, he has never stopped by, and I, you know, wouldn't bring this up if not for the fact that Corinne Jean-Pierre was asked about this and says he still apparently intends to go.
Give us an update when it comes to East Palestine. The president has said that he would go. He has not yet. And also, Governor Mike DeWine asked the president to issue a major disaster declaration a few weeks ago. Is that something the president is going to do? And if so, when?
So on your first question, the president intends to go. Don't have a time or a date to preview at this time.
You sit on a throne of lies.
You got 6 months to prepare and you still don't have a date? Like, just admit the president's moved on. He's got other things to do. You got a re-election campaign coming up. Is he going to stop by during the re-election campaign? That would be more insulting than beneficial, I would think, to their re-election effort. My God, it's just so tone deaf. You know, just admit the fault, move on. You're clearly not coming at this point. And if you did, Joe probably tripped down the stairs on his way there. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on The Circle. One more soundbite from Corinne Jean-Pierre. Oh, this time doubling down on the White House, coming after your appliances. It doesn't matter whether it's a washing machine, a stove, a pizza oven, or now your water heater. They will take it all, and it's for your own good. After all, the establishment has your benefit at their heart.
So from this administration, we've seen them go after gas stoves, air conditioning units with regulation, refrigerators, washing machines, dishwashers, now water heaters. How many more home appliances will Americans eventually have to replace then because of regulation?
So just to be clear, when it comes to water heaters, and it is proposed, what has been put forward, and if it is enacted, it would not take it into effect until 2029. So let's not forget that. So we want to make sure that we have the facts out there. And if and when it is enacted, it's going to help consumers save about $11 billion a year. That's what the president wants to do. He wants to make sure that we lower costs for the American people.
Establishment, establishment, you always know what's best.
You suck! Learn the rules!
Oh, thank God it's not coming back or coming into effect until 2029. That will give us plenty of time to prepare for the shellacking the government has in store, making every aspect of daily life more expensive and unable to afford it. Now, as bad as it is in the United States. Thankfully, we're not. Canada continuing to add letters to the ever-growing alphabet soup montage. And of course, he's saying that the United States is worse. This is Justin Trudeau taking a jab at his southern neighbor while also promoting just a weird new moniker. We'll let you see what you think about this.
It's scary to see what's happening.
Ooh.
In the United States.
Scary.
Whether it's 2SLGBTQI+ rights.
What?
That are constantly being attacked. My government will never let it happen. My government will always stand up unequivocally for women's rights, for 2SLGBTQI+ rights.
Jeez.
Not even a real country anyway.
Okay, so it started with the gay community, and then the gay and lesbian community, and then the gay, lesbian, bi community, and then the LGBT community, and now the two, and then the LGBTQIA community, and now the 2S LGBTQIA+ community. This is getting damn ridiculous, and I think there could be some consolidation here. Like, just logistically, some of these things are the same damn thing, are they not? Like, two-spirit, 2S, is the same thing as transgender, right? Because that's what the people who are two-spirit are transgender. So why is that not just the T in the LGBT? You already had it. Now, I also don't understand why homosexuality is gendered, because you have lesbian and gay. Well, that's both homosexual because it's attraction to the same sex. So isn't that the same thing? But okay, they have separate designations. And then bi, well, all right, anyway. And then the queer, well, that's just non-standard heterosexuality, which could be any of the four LGB or the T. And then I is intersex, which again, I think falls under the T, or A. Like, my goodness, you don't need all these. And the plus, it's going to get longer. That's why it's been joked about the alphabet soup. Like, Canada seems like a godless hellhole. And I'm glad that I live here in the United States, despite the fact that it is ever diminishing in stature. Now, note this. This is the Canadian health minister. She has a problem with Clown World, too, but not for the reasons you would hope. She actually has a problem with calling Clown World Clown World, because now honk honk means Heil Hitler.
How much vitriol do we have to see of honk honk, which is an acronym for Heil Hitler, do we need to see by these protesters on social media? Mm-hmm.
If you're taking issue with people saying honk honk on social media, you are definitely part of the problem, and you need to get off the internet, because social media is not real life, and pointing out the absurdity of the world is not oppressive. It is not oppressing you. Oh my goodness. And that is the mental health minister of Canada. They got problems. Now, you know who they would really be offended by, and who's really a radical? Of course, Joe Biden saying that there's a problem with far-right extremism, you know, here in the United States. And doubtlessly now, a classic person from all our childhoods collectively would be viewed as an extremist by today's standards, especially regarding the transgender movement. Mr. Rogers, known for his far-right extremism.
Boys are boys from the beginning.
Ooh,
if
no.
You were born a boy, you stay a boy. Girls are girls right from the start.
No.
If you were born a girl, you stay a girl and grow up to be a lady. Everybody's fancy. Everybody's fine.
Oh, I'm so offended.
Your body's fancy. And so is mine. Only girls can be the mommies.
I can't believe how offensive this
only
man is being.
Only boys can be the daddies. Yes, sir. Everybody's fancy. Everybody's fine. Your body's fancy. And so is mine.
What? You don't say. You don't say. You don't say.
So if you want the antithesis to the 2S LGBTQIA+, I guess, you know, that is encapsulated by Mr. Rogers. That's That's some far-right extremism, and naturally you'd find it here on 93 WIBC. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on The Circle. We've ran over producer Graham. I blame you for letting me run wild, so it's time to cut for a commercial break, and we'll be coming back after these messages.
Cause I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle.
Jingle, jangle.
As I go riding merrily along.
Jingle, jangle.
You're listening to Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIBC.
And that song.
Thanks for tuning into the show, ladies and gentlemen. We've had just a blast this hour. If you missed any of it, check the podcast uploaded to WIBC.com. But before we wrap things up, Barbenheimer, that's the Barbie Oppenheimer dual release, has been smashing box office records, showing that film-going audiences thirst for originality, if nothing else. So, you know, seeing that perform well is hopefully sending the right message to Hollywood executives who have been leaning on recycling old IPs. It actually broke, speaking of breaking box office records, Barbie smashed Christopher Nolan's 2008 record of The Dark Knight for the most profitable Monday gross of a debut weekend. At the time, Dark Knight made $24 million unadjusted for inflation, and Barbie made $26 million. So that's kind of interesting. Also, Matt Damon doing the rounds for Oppenheimer with his co-star Emily Blunt, and this is when you know you've achieved more money, or you have more money than sense, complaining about a past film in which he had to kiss Scarlett Johansson because she ate an onion sandwich. Matt Damon complaining. Boo, Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
Boo. I don't care if she's eating an onion sandwich. You could send her down to St. Elmo and give her a St. Elmo shrimp cocktail with a horseradish. Bring that woman over here. I am fine. I do not care if she has the smelly breath. Scarlett Johansson, fine woman. Well assembled, as they would say. So Matt Damon, just a terrible take from a mediocre actor. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on The Circle. We have so much more to come on 93 WIBC. In the next hour, Jason Hammer going to be joining the show, talking more about the Jefferson Shreve interview on Wednesday and what a disappointment that was. And, of course, we'll also be getting into the new Trump charges regarding his classified documents indictment. All of that coming up in the next hour. Stay tuned to 93 WIBC.
Herman Cain is his name, so you better ride that train.
You're listening to Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIBC.
Pray for Cain, yeah, you pray for Cain, and then you get on your knees.
Welcome back to Saturday Night on The Circle. I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher. Producer Graham doing a spectacular job, beep, 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 pushing the buttons and doing the things to make the show function. We're starting this hour discussing the new charges brought against Donald Trump regarding his classified documents scandal, which is ridiculous for many, many reasons. But certainly, if you're going to go after Donald Trump for that, we got a couple other names to bring up. We got Hillary Clinton for sure. Joe Biden definitely on tape saying that he had classified documents going back to the 1970s he was keeping in his garage. And also, to a lesser extent, former Vice President Mike Pence, who also had classified documents, and several other bad actors. But whatever. New charges brought against Donald Trump. But do you remember the days, Producer Graham, when we used to have, you know, normal candidates like Herman Cain, for example, the 999 plan? I liked the 999 plan. You know, God's going to take 10%, then the government should take no more than 9. You know, I might be an atheist, but I agreed with that insight.
I actually don't know who Herman Cain is.
Never heard that name before.
Oh my goodness. Okay, he was a black conservative businessman and conservative talk show commentator. Okay. He was very intelligent, and he ran for president in 2012. I thought he would have made a spectacular Republican nominee, but he was taken down in his prime by scurrious accusations regarding sexual impropriety during his tenure at Godfather's Pizza, which turned out to not even be true, but by the time that all was revealed, you know, it had already tanked his campaign. So that's how things go. But I remember when we used to have like semi-normal candidates that weren't involved in the never-ending scandal, you know, which, I mean, you might think it's illegitimate to be charging Donald Trump with taking these classified documents, but he damn well took them.
Yeah.
Like, that seems pretty inarguable, especially since he was on tape bragging about how he took the documents and I could have declassified them, but I didn't. Oops. You know, like, not smart to be saying that on tape, my guy, but
yeah. When I was only 11 years old, that in 2012, so I wasn't really worried about that kind of stuff at the time.
Okay. I would have been 19, just turning 20 in 2012. But I was a nerd. I would have been paying attention when I was 11 too. I think I called, because I was in sixth grade at that time, and I said some girl who was in my class was dumb because she supported John Kerry. I got in trouble. I got in trouble by the teacher. Like, you can't call people dumb for supporting candidates that you don't agree with. But I was right there, a little, you know, Republican conservative Ethan Hatcher in the only year that I went to public school, sixth grade. So yeah, that was.
I would not have gone to school with you.
Yeah, I was. It was pretty uncomfortable all around. But yeah, Donald Trump, new indictments unveiled on Thursday. Prosecutors accusing Trump of now erasing tapes. And a new defendant has been added, a worker at Mar-a-Lago colluding with Trump to obstruct justice and delete those tapes, facing new obstruction of justice charges related to the alleged attempt to erase the security camera video. In addition, new indictment adds a felony count under the espionage charge stemming from his alleged possession of a war plan, which, again, he talked about on the tape. He had battle plans. So you can't say that this is like his personal notes that he's taken home from the White House and, you know, wanting to maintain control of his own stuff or parse through that before it's returned to the National Archives. What does he have? Battle plans like for Iran, I think it was, Iranian battle plans. This, you know, and we could have better candidates like Ron DeSantis, more normal candidates. He's a perfectly successful conservative Republican governor. But then you have smooth brain takes like this. You can't see it. You can on the YouTube stream, but you can't see this over the radio. I'm holding in my phone, in my hand, my phone. And Laura Loomer from Project Veritas, a purported investigative journalist, she's taking a dig at Ron DeSantis. Producer Graham, we'll put you on the spot. Of all the reasons that you could imagine to complain about Ron DeSantis, why do you think conservative commentator and Project Veritas investigative journalist Laura Loomer would have a problem with Ron DeSantis? What might be possibly her issue? Take a guess, a wild shot in the dark.
He's conservative?
No. On the same par of being that stupid. Because he has a beer. Because he's holding a Coors at a campaign event. She says, I prefer my candidate sober like Donald Trump. I wouldn't be caught dead with alcohol in my hand as a candidate. I think it's a bad look when candidates are getting sloshed off of Coors on the campaign trail. You shouldn't be drinking at campaign events. It's classless. I don't know what to do with these
people. Come on.
Like, yeah, that's such a smooth brain take. And if you are that insecure about yourself, you can't let loose enough to have a Coors. You know, that strikes me as being awfully strange and concerning. Just a side diversion, doesn't actually have a damn thing to do with what we were talking about. I just noticed this on the Twitter feed, and that is a take from a twit. Aptly named. Although now they're going to call it X.com, which is stupid. Producer Graham and I were talking about this off the air, whether or not this is all some giant troll from Elon Musk rebranding Twitter as X.com. And I was musing that maybe if I had, you know, infinite money and like multi-billions of dollars, you know, I would just, you know, everything that I dreamt or thought was cool when I was 13 would just be a reality as an adult. Like maybe that's Elon Musk's. agenda.
I mean, yeah, it kind of sounds like it. He's spending his money pretty poorly.
Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle, 93 WIBC. Of course, now there's been rumors Republicans may act and engage in impeachment charges against the president. And Adam Schiff hypocritically opposing Republicans and saying, you know, they just want to impeach anybody over anything these days. You know, they're impeach happy, these Republicans, according to Adam Schiff.
I think the Republican desire to impeach someone, anyone, no matter whether there's any evidence, just shows how they have descended into chaos.
Hypocrisy is the Vaseline of political intercourse. They didn't like what they saw, so they changed it to make it sound better. Just like in these personal ads. It sounds great, but it's all lies.
Adam Schiff, who was censured for lying to the American public regarding so-called evidence surrounding Russian collusion in the Donald Trump campaign, which came back with nothing. He also, of course, supported both of the failed impeachment attempts against the former president. One of them, for a ridiculous reason, the Ukrainian phone call seeking more information about Biden's illegitimate business dealings, which are now coming to light. So, of course, that was completely within the purview of the president to engage in a conversation like that, and they tried to impeach Donald Trump over that. Completely ridiculous. So if anybody's going to get called out, it should be the Democrats, not the Republicans. Rand Paul also addressing rumors of impeachment for Joe Biden, making a solid point, in my opinion, that if we go down this road, we damn well better have all our ducks in a row and make a solid case and have all the evidence, because just all the impeachments, especially the scurrilous accusations like those against Donald Trump, particularly about the hush money payments. Anyway, that's a different matter. It has been withering trust in the American Republic. So Rand Paul, I think, making a salient observation here. I love the representative, by the way. Great senator.
It's not good for the Republic to keep impeaching presidents and indicting presidents. Yeah. All of this stuff is destructive. The other side says, oh, they want to, they're for preserving democracy. They're pitting everyone against each other, and they're destroying the fabric of our republic. So I think we have to be careful not to fall into the same trap.
Absolutely. And also, let's not forget, you know, the clock is ticking on the re-election campaign for Joe Biden. Before we know it, the vote in November is going to be here, just a little more over than a year to go. It might not be worth pursuing impeachment allegations against the president, even if they aren't legitimate. Just wait to defeat him in the ballot box, and if he is re-elected, then we can go after impeachment, especially if the grounds are legitimate, you know. Or we could pursue him criminally after he loses the election too. That would be also be an option. I'd support both. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. Before we cut to the next segment, of course, I also wanted to cover one of the stranger things in Congress. They had testimony about UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomenon, which what they're calling UFOs, and a former member of the military saying that evidently there's evidence and potentially bodies being retained by the U.S. government.
If you believe we have crashed craft, stated earlier, do we have the bodies of the pilots who piloted this craft?
As I've stated publicly already in my News Nation interview, biologics came with some of these recoveries. Yeah.
Were they, I guess, human or non-human biologics?
Non-human, and that was the assessment of people with direct knowledge on the program I talked to that are currently still on the program.
Okay. Interesting. Well, of course, he didn't provide any evidence during the testimony. He said that he would speak with congressional officials in a skiff and provide them with the relevant information. Who knows if it's real? You know, like much like Mulder from X-Files, I'd like to believe, but, you know, show me the evidence, like Missouri, the show me state. Anyway, thanks for listening to the show. I've ran long. Stay tuned for more. Jason Hammer joins us up next talking about the disastrous Jefferson Shreve interview. Stay tuned.
This is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
Hello
and welcome back to Saturday Night on The Circle. I am the bespectacled curmudgeon, Ethan Hatcher. Don't miss the podcast uploaded to saturdaynightonthecircle.fireside.fm, wibc.com, and hop in the comments while we stream live on the YouTube. This week, Jefferson Shreve stopped by the WIBC studios to explain his public safety proposal that included a bid to ban assault weapons, eliminate permitless carry, and raise the firearm purchase age to 21. During his time in the studio, Shreve doubled down on these ideas. Here to commiserate over this unenforced error of a campaign decision is the son of Beech Grove, one half of the number one rated afternoon show, Hammer and Nigel. It's the fun-loving, hard-hitting, award-winning, good-natured, moonshine-drinking Jason Hammer, who joins us once again.
There we go.
Thanks for coming in the studio, sir.
Man, thank you for having me.
So, as a fellow Marion County resident, I'm sure you are as equally depressed as I am that we are likely looking at another 4 years of Joe Hogsett. How do you blow what should have been a very competitive race?
Right. And this is why I've been so upset. Because a lot of people have said, man, I've never seen you this angry before. Why are you so upset? Because you don't understand how much I despise Joe Hogsett.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen firsthand what he has done to my city.
Yeah, you and me both, brother.
And I thought, all right, Jefferson Shreve has a puncher's chance because he's got money, right? Have money, you got a shot. And with that money, I thought we would have a competitive mayor's race. Because let's not get it twisted. Joe Hogsett is a vulnerable candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Even Democrats, when you look at the polling, they're not all on board with what old Diamond Joe Boss Hogsett wants to do. So he sits there, vulnerable, beatable, here in a city where very rarely in the long storied history of Indianapolis has somebody been a three-term mayor. And he just craps it away. Shreve craps it away by looking at his base that supports him. The base that would put a Shreve sign in their yard and basically gives them two middle fingers because he wants to pander to that part of the vote where you might pick somebody up, but you're not guaranteed to pick somebody up. You took a sure thing in your base that was going to vote for you, and you gambled on maybe some other folks that are Democrats would vote for you. It's the plus minus, and right now, there's a lot on the minus side, very few on the plus.
Well, he conceded to the points of Joe Hogsett with his plan to address crime that basically punishes law-abiding gun owners and ignores holding the prosecutor's office to accountability. He's talking about teenagers running around in the streets and like, oh, they have firearms, and yes, that's a problem.
I can't tell you how many folks I've talked to in other parts of this city that have 14 and 15-year-old kids walking around with handguns in their pockets or the backpacks. I mean, it's just way too many.
But my dude, it's already legal for 14 or 15-year-olds to purchase firearms. So how does raising the age to 21 for minimum purchase accomplish anything? It's just mind-boggling and frustrating. And I'm just as upset as you are because I really hoped that we would be getting rid of Joe Hogsett. He's vulnerable, especially on the crime issue, but you're just conceding the point, agreeing with him, and copying aspects of his public safety plan and trying to differentiate yourself by saying like, oh, well, the difference is I'll enforce these bad ideas even sooner instead of waiting around 7 years.
So that soundbite that you just played from Jefferson Shreve, I am a law-abiding citizen who constitutionally carries, right? I have my concealed constitutional carry. I still had to pass a background check. Everything's still the same as before. I just don't have to have a piece of paper that says license on it now. That's the only difference. Jefferson Shreve thinks I'm the problem, not the fact that 14, 15-year-olds in crappy home lives have weapons in the first place. You're campaigning against people like me, running commercials, blaming people like me and people who think like me, when anybody who knows anything at all about Indianapolis knows the problem isn't law-abiding citizens with constitutional carry. It's not what he calls assault weapons. Ethan, we work downtown. You live here. When was the last time you walked around Monument Circle, went and got something to eat, and saw multiple people with AR-15s walking around?
Never. This isn't Grand Theft Auto land. That's what I keep saying. Like, people do not run around. I had a shooting right in front of my house, Jason, and they were shooting around with handguns, not assault rifles, not long rifles, not shotguns.
And you know me, I'm a gambling man. I'm willing to bet dollars to donuts here that the folks that were firing those shots in front of your residence probably either had a criminal history in the past or not eligible to own a firearm legally anyway.
Well, Casey Daniels flat out stumped Shreve when it came to talking about what teenagers already being illegal to purchase firearms and then effectively doing nothing by raising the age to 21.
And this is why he got so upset when Robin Casey brought up the word pander. I don't know if you noticed this, but whenever that word got brought up, and Rob said it, I think Casey said it at one point, whenever the word pandering got brought up, Jefferson Shreve got his feelings hurt. He was quick to blame it on Joe Hogsett when anybody with two eyes and a functioning brain can see that's his whole campaign strategy right now. That's all he's doing. You don't want these law-abiding conservative votes. You want to pander to the people that might vote for you. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And honestly, maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves, Ethan, because this law would never become law anyway.
No.
This plan would never become law anyway. All he had to do at the very beginning of this process was come out, because again, Hogsett put this plan out first. Jefferson Shreve just has to come out and say, look at my opponent. He might as well be passing out free unicorns. These are not solutions. These have no chance at all of becoming law in Indianapolis. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to have actual solutions. I will try to negotiate with judges and prosecutors to lock up bad guys because I'm a deal maker. I'm a negotiator. That's what I do. And if we can't get that, we'll find workarounds. We're not going to blame law-abiding citizens. We're going to clean up this city with real solutions. Instead of doing that, he looked at this wonderful plan from Joe Hogsett that has about as much chance of becoming law as I do of being the number one pick in the NBA draft and said, hot damn, let's do the same thing.
Well, he acknowledged he doesn't have the authority to put into action these proposals using the city council. He's ceding his authority to the General Assembly, which is asinine when you're running to be the mayor of the city of Indianapolis. But no, his plan is, no, I'm going to make these proposals to the General Assembly instead.
It is not pandering to say, okay, these are some elements, having listen to our policing community that makes sense, that they feel strongly about, that I will support as the city's chief executive, and I will go through the due course of law and asking for these things.
Okay.
So the way you do that is you include it in your legislative priorities at the start of the session, and you take them before the members of our General Assembly. Look, it's up to them.
I think I can smell shite. Yes, I can definitely smell shite.
Let's start with this police thing first, right?
I love how he's blaming the cops.
His argument is, well, I've heard from the leaders that this is what they want. You heard from Doug Carter, who at the time of the constitutional carry debate was going on, was doing the bidding of Governor Holcomb, who never wanted this in the first place. And you heard from Chief Randall Taylor, who's got his you-know-what's-in-a-vice grip by the mayor's office. The same mayor's office that stripped authority away from the chief of police and gave it to a civilian-led merit board. So those folks, they're the mouthpiece for other politicians. I've got so many friends that work the front lines in law enforcement, and I've texted all of them, and I said, is constitutional carry really that big of a deal for you guys? They said, no, it's a nothing burger, because one, the law is basically still the same. People still have to pass a background check. The only thing they don't have is a piece of paper, and the majority of the crimes they investigate here in Indianapolis, it's people who can't legally own a firearm anyway. It's a non-factor. It's a nothing burger. So when people say law enforcement support it, no, politicians do that have the ear of certain mouthpieces.
Well, I think he missed the point entirely, and I brought this issue up when I was talking with Rob about his interview with Jefferson Shreve earlier, is that he, yes, support the police, but represent the voters. I believe in supporting our law enforcement in their endeavors to enforce the laws, but I still don't think that members of our law enforcement community should be the ones writing those laws, because if it was up to them, damn near everything would be illegal, just like the private prison systems that seek to increase the penalties on petty crimes in order to fill their jail cells. So I love and support our police officers, but it's the voters that you're supposed to represent. Represent, not the police.
And Jefferson Shreve camp, they come out with this line of, well, we spoke to a lot of people in Marion County and they support what this plan is. How many people did you speak to? Mm-hmm. And are these people that would even consider, just sniff, voting for you in the first place? Because I got a funny feeling that they're not. And the whole thing is sickening because I really thought he had a chance. Because Joe Hogsett is worthless. He really is. Because we're being tough with Jefferson Shreve, I don't want people to forget how awful Joe Hogsett really is. He went missing during riots in the city, when bricks were going through Windsor Jewelry and fires were being set all over the city, when ATMs were trying to be dragged out of the bank over here off of Meridian Street, nobody knows, wink wink, where Joe Hogsett was. And the gutless TV stations in the city, nobody wants to investigate that. I promise you, Ethan, if this were Chicago or Philly or Atlanta, another blue city, even the journalists there would be tough if their mayor just went missing while things were burning. That didn't happen here. So if I'm Jefferson Shreve, the only way that I think I can rescue this thing is I have a line of TV commercials that just go full General Sherman and burn the thing to the ground. Where was Joe Hogsett during the riots? Was he drunk? Was he in rehab? These are the rumors. Nobody wants to ask him about it. Show the pictures of what happened those two nights in Indianapolis and ask where he was.
The only way he can recover is if he completely resets the conversation, because he blundered the crime aspect of this campaign. It took him 20 minutes in his interview with Robin Casey to finally arrive at the one thing we've all wanted to hear, which is holding criminals more accountable and putting pressure on the prosecutor's office. This is what he said, but it took forever to get there.
Hogsett may run an ad about hiring 700 cops, but look at where we are on net. We're losing our talented, experienced veterans that can up that solve rate so we can pull those young, violent offenders off the street, and the system has to work. The court system and the prosecutorial system needs to work. Public safety is an ecosystem. The mayor doesn't control all of it, but the mayor's got the bully pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
I will be, whether it's from the city county building or if elected from this studio, I will be on message about, ladies and gentlemen, our prosecutor has a responsibility to us to move these people along so we get them off the street.
Now, Jason, I don't know about you, but if you would have just opened with that, we would have been having a completely different conversation here.
He wants to brag about being this great negotiator, right? Like Donald Trump's strategy in 2016. You know, I can negotiate with people. I'm a deal maker. But he focused on trying to cut a deal with Indiana Republicans at the State House to try to make certain rights illegal in Marion County. That's not the deal making that I'm looking for. I'm looking for you working with that bum in the prosecutor's office, Ryan Mears. I'm looking for you to work with these lunatics and these clapping like seals Democrats on the city county council and actually get some positive things done here. That's what we need. We don't need rights taken away from people like me. I'm not your problem. Anybody that has been to Indianapolis, whether you're going out to dinner, whether you're going to a ball game, whatever you're doing, it's not people like me that are the problem. It's the people that this leadership in the city keeps letting back out on the streets. Back out being the key word.
Mark my words, and this isn't, you know, any big revelation or any hot take here, but mark my words, by chasing after far-left Democrats and alienating conservative-based Republican voters, he will surely lose both and self-immolate his campaign as a result of this disastrous public safety proposal.
I've heard people say, you know who Joe Hogsett is. He hates everything that the majority of listeners of WIBC stand for. Doesn't like you, hates you, went missing for the riots. He's never going to be held accountable. You know who he is. Jefferson Shreve acts like, but I need the WIBC audience. I want to be your friend. Meanwhile, his main advisor, Mark Lubbers, goes on Twitter, rips WIBC, rips the listeners of this station, feuds with Guy Relford. See, this is why he got so defensive when the word pandering got brought up. That's all that this dude does. And right now, it's like that episode of South Park. Our election is between a giant douche and a turd sandwich, and I plan to just write in Abdul.
Thanks for summarizing it that way, Jason. I think that's a great place to leave it off. We've ran long, but I appreciate you coming in the studio, my friend.
Thank you.
You're listening to 93 WIBC. Stay tuned for more Saturday Night on The Circle.
This is Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIPC.
Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Saturday Night on The Circle, where I'm your bohemian codger, Ethan Hatcher, producer Graham, beep, 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 pushing the buttons and doing the things necessary to make this show function. This segment, we'll be discussing our leaders in Congress and the executive, at all levels, really, who are basically falling apart. And it appears the difficult decision many families across America are having to make is whether to send Grandpa to the nursing home or have him run for Senate. It's a hard choice. Diane Feinstein, who was not necessarily the sharpest knife in the drawer before she became geriatric octogenarian, is now having to be instructed by her aides how to vote while important votes are happening in the Senate. Doesn't know how to say aye.
Senator Feinstein.
Say aye. Pardon me?
Aye.
Yeah.
To say
I would like to support a yes vote on this. It provides $823 billion. That's an increase of $26 billion for the Department of Defense. And it funds priorities submitted.
Yeah, just say aye.
Okay, just
aye. Thank you.
It is crazy. We say to give a woman power is like to give a gun to a monkey. We have stopped doing that ever since the 1999 Astana Zoo massacre.
I see Matt Vermillion in the comments bringing up an excellent point, whether or not there should be age limits introduced to Congress. And with examples like this, I think that's a pretty rational question, because if you can't basically function, if you don't have the adequate cognitive ability to perform in the day-to-day, how could you possibly adequately represent the constituency, which Dianne Feinstein clearly is not? Mitch McConnell also having problems. By the way, hop in the comments on YouTube, if you're listening to the show. Always fun conversations to be had. You can find us by typing in Saturday Night on The Circle into the search bar on YouTube, or typing in WIBC, clicking on the show page, and then selecting our stream. You can find us there. Always check out the comment section. Interesting stuff to say. But yeah, age limits, good possibility. I doubt the representatives would be too happy to enact that, since they would be the ones that affected. Mitch McConnell also having problems. He basically had like a mini stroke. We don't really know at this point. He stopped mid-sentence and was quiet for about 18 seconds, like he had the blue screen of death on a Windows and just restarted.
This week has been good bipartisan cooperation. And a string of
just standing there.
Nobody snapped at him?
This is meaner than a snap.
Okay, Mitch. Anything else you want to say, or should I just go back to your office? Do you want to say anything else to the press?
See, that's meaner than snapping at him. Do you have anything else to say? No, idiot. He just stood there with a blank expression on his face for the last 18 seconds. No, he doesn't have anything else to say. He possibly had a medical episode on live TV. What are you talking about? Get that man out of there and get him to a doctor's checkup right away. Do you have anything else to say? That's probably worse than just, you know, snapping like, are you there, Mitch? Are you there? Earth to Mitch. Later, he kind of brushed it aside. He hasn't really spoken about this, to my knowledge. But he told the president he got sandbagged.
Well, the president called to check on me. I told him I got sandbagged.
How are you feeling now, sir? How are you feeling now?
I'm fine.
Have you seen a doctor? Are you going to see a doctor?
Any idea what happened?
Huh?
Any idea what happened?
I'm fine. That's the important part.
How embarrassing.
I mean, but he's in good company when it comes to the president and mental gaffes. Now Joe Biden is claiming he's made good on a long-awaited campaign promise that he has ended cancer as we know it. And yes, he did say that out loud.
I said I'd cure cancer. They looked at me like, why cancer? Because no one thinks we can. That's why. And we can. We end cancer as we know it.
Am I evil? Am I an evil person?
Oh my God. I mean, absolutely. Do I not tell you that enough? You are like the most evil guy I know, man.
I can't imagine how insulting it is for the hundreds of thousands of people who have to deal with cancer treatments on a daily basis, whose lives have been forever altered by the diagnosis, whose families have to alter their structure to support the patients and their ongoing treatment efforts. So no, the president clearly has not ended cancer as we know it. You can't even call it a teleprompter glitch. You know, he knew what he was saying and he said it anyway. He's lying to your face with these ridiculous claims. Running long, so we got to leave it there. But stay tuned for more on Saturday night on The Circle. We'll be wrapping things up in the next segment on 93 WIBC.
And so I wake in the morning and I step outside and I take a deep breath and I get real high and I scream from the top of my lungs, what's going on?
This is Saturday night on The Circle on 93 WIBC.
Thanks for listening to the show, ladies and gentlemen, where we're wrapping things up on the Circle of Indianapolis on a Saturday evening. Thanks for tuning into the show. Find my podcast on the show page at WIBC.com. And one small point of order before we coast things to a close here. I will be out next week hosting my annual Apasta Fest, a gathering of heathenous ex-Jehovah's Witnesses to celebrate our exit from the cult of Jehovah's Witnesses and our newfound freedom as individuals. So I will be out hosting my guests, having a hell of a time. I hope you enjoy the best of selections put together by producer Carl, and we will be back the next week, but departing again in mid-August for a phonograph show where I will be displaying some of my collection with other friends and collectors in the hobby. So check out that and don't miss the broadcast. In the meantime, I thank you for tuning in. Before we close, Greta Thunberg, how dare you? Producer Carl loves talking about Greta, and I wish he was here for this because she's now been declared officially by the land of Sweden to be a petty criminal, receiving fines for having disobeyed the orders of a police officer in a Just Stop Oil protest.
We just learned that I got 30-day fines for disobeying the police, which was expected. We are definitely not going to back down because of this. We know that what we are doing in some circumstances are seen as these, but right now we don't have any laws that holds the carbon in the ground.
Are you serious?
We don't have any laws that currently hold the carbon into the ground. Well, I don't know. What do you even do with that? Clearly, she doesn't know what she's talking about. She's just a puppet for a broader movement. And it's kind of sad to see how this little girl has been manipulated by the people surrounding her, in a quest to have a mascot for their narrative. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on The Circle 93 WIBC. Also this week, this is kind of funny. Check this out. Producer Graham, where an Arkansas truck driver was charged this week and sentenced to 4 years after beating an officer with a flagpole at the January 6th riots. And I kind of find this funny because I imagine he's a guy with like a Blue Lives Matter, Thin Blue Line, you know, sticker probably right on his truck. And he's beating an officer with a flagpole. And I know I'm probably going to make a few people mad here, but what happened on January 6th was shameful. I don't know why that's a controversial take among Republicans, because I know it's not really a question how I would be feeling if it were a stampede of Democrats who broke their way into the Capitol building and assaulted police officers in an extreme riot. Like, that would be absolutely shameful, which January 6th was. And anybody who broke the law should be charged and receive due punishment. And clearly, if you're beating police officers with a flagpole, there's a problem there. Also, before we wrap up, by the way, producer Graham doing a bang up job. You've been left unscathed by your baptismal broadcast, I take it?
Yep.
Feeling pretty good?
Yeah, it went extremely well.
Yeah, you did great.
Thank you.
You lived up to the high standards set by producer Carl, so we appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Now, before we bring the broadcast to a close, you may have heard Casa Bonita received a $40 million facelift from the producers of South Park. They also instituted a $30 wage, hourly wage, and no tip structure at the beleaguered business, but that seems to have enraged its staff, who are now demanding a return to the former pay structure. Now, have you ever heard of Casa Bonita? This is out in Colorado.
I have not. No.
It is basically like a Mexican restaurant theme park.
What's Casa Bonita? Dude, haven't you ever been there? It's a big Mexican restaurant, but they have like cliff jumpers and Black Bart's Cave and all kinds of stuff. It's like the Disneyland of Mexican restaurants. This Saturday, awesome! Casa Bonita, Casa Bonita, food and fun in a festive atmosphere. Casa Bonita, who said I'm inviting you?
Right. You know, I mean, if you want a good approximation, I do have a recommendation for a great local Mexican fare. You should check out La Parada on the Near East Side of Indianapolis.
That I've heard of.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Right on the corner of State and New York. I've been there a number of times. You get good service out there, good portions, and they don't have the cliff divers like Casa Bonita, but they do have the good food, and that's presumably what you're going for. If I was ever in Colorado, I'd go to Casa Bonita. But I think it's hilarious that the staff is complaining about their $30 an hour wage when that is more than twice the minimum wage of California and a significant portion higher than their state median wage. Anyway, thanks for listening to the show. I'm out next week. There will be a best of show, but in the meantime, I leave you with my parting words of wisdom. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, whoever you're with, remember that life is a state of mind. Leave you in the capable hands of producer Carl next week on 93 WIBC.